Well, I think we're all feeling pretty good today. You got to like when a coach who is pretty much universally beloved sneaks in a contract extension when no one was waiting for it, no one saw it coming, and it happened this morning. Nick Nurse locked in long term. We don't know exactly how many years, but he's going to be here for the foreseeable future, and I guess Masai Ujiri's got to be next on the docket. But that's always a good little nugget to drop out of nowhere, sure, that Nick Nurse is sticking around for a while.
What kind of dollar value do you figures on that?
What's the, yeah, I have no idea. We obviously know what coaches are making in the NHL, but what is it published what coaches make in the NBA?
I think you can find it, but it is weird. Like, you look at Woj and Shams. Like, these guys know what Giannis had for dessert at
right.
his little meeting with the owner. But no one's said anything about Nick Nurse and the term of the deal. At least I haven't seen it. You know, I've been waiting for it to see how long and how much. And I would think he's got some leverage, man. I mean,
well,
he walked
coach
in there
of the year.
And was, yeah, championship, coach of the year.
Wouldn't it
seems to know what he's doing.
Wouldn't it be between $5 and $10 million a year?
I would think so, yeah.
I would think so, too. You have to make as much as maybe, you know, a higher-end bench player. Don't you think?
Well, it's weird, though. The NBA, there's so much money to splash around, man.
There is, but I, you know what, Brian, you could speak to it more because you love the NFL, but, like, what does a guy like Belichick make per year? I've never heard that. I've never heard what Belichick and, you know, Pop, like, you know, the greatest coaches that are out there, you never hear what they make per year.
I would guess Belichick makes $10 million a year.
I would think minimum $10
million. I hope.
Yeah, he runs the whole operation too, right? Like, he's the coach. He's basically the GM, the president of football operations. He's making all the picks at the draft. He does everything. So, and he's been there for 20 years, and how many Super Bowls has he won? And he's been to 9. I got to think he's getting paid pretty well. You know what's crazy? What's crazy is college coaches, the amount of money they get.
Oh.
And a lot of them work for public institutions. So if you work for a state college, it's like – the head coach of LSU it makes more money than anyone else in the state. You know, like the governor is sitting there like, man, this guy makes like $7 million more dollars than I do.
It's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's
I
crazy.
I just Googled Belichick and it says $12 million. I don't know if that's factual or what.
But that's – that.
You just Google the guy's name and salary and $12 million pops up. And
that sounds like at least ballpark. And all I could think about is this guy probably makes 10 to 12 or 15 million a year plus bonuses. And we saw, I don't know where he was at the draft. He looked like he was sitting at in a shed with an IKEA table. And remember that the dog? He was feeding the dog.
Like, it's a
he
brutal
like,
like 08 laptop with like a mouse. Yeah, he, you know, he probably lives like a minimalist lifestyle. He's got all the money in the world. He hasn't spent any. He doesn't even know what his contract really is. He just wants to show up and coach. And I would guess he feels pretty good about himself right now because the Patriots are 1-0. Tom Brady's getting roasted. Steven Gostkowski, who left him as well and took a kicker's gig with Tennessee that may only last about 24 hours. He was
There's
getting
no
destroyed last
way
night.
He plays next. Like, doesn't no, he? Isn't that the prototypical like cut the next day?
Not with a guy of that stature, though. Like, he has been so good throughout his career that I think. I mean, they ran him out there
that
to win the game.
I
That's
can't
how crazy
Vrabel
it is. He
kept
won the game.
Running him out there.
Oh, me neither.
Yeah, but at what point do you think? Okay, he's going to have some success here.
Wow.
Like that's you're having a night like that. You take your shoe off and you run into the. You know, you
wasn't
run into
that
the
his magic
room.
Touch? He took his sock off. Didn't he do that? He took his sock off
I don't,
and changed
I don't
things
know.
Up.
I had
then
no
he wheeled
idea.
Out there and he made the big kick. It's just like whatever.
It was a chip shot. It was like a 30-yard chip shot, and the first three he missed were 40-plus. I mean, those are tough field goals, high altitude, outdoors, Denver.
Yeah,
you know, missing one of those, you can totally understand. Missing three and missing an extra point. And as a result, Denver loses but covers the numbers. So 0-1, 2-0 last night.
Yeah, Beansy. Yes, Beansy. I think that pretty much draws it even.
Steven. Oh, it's not even close. I told this guy writes me today. He goes, "You owe me money. Bring it tomorrow." I go, "Dude, I own your house. You won your garage back last night.
No,
you won your garage back.
You seem to forget my wins. You're like most degenerate gamblers. You forget about my wins, and I've been chipping away." chipping away. Now give the man his money.
Back to even?
I don't know about that.
We made a proposal today that I think we shook on via text that I think made a lot of sense. So I think we're good, but it's always weird watching a kicker just melt, you know, and they were calling it on ESPN last night, and Steve Levy and Greasy and Lewis Riddick, they're like, I feel for this guy. I've been watching him. Lisa Salters did a report. She's like, he's been sitting by himself for 20 minutes with no shoes on, and no one wants to talk to him. No one wants to look at him.
It's like you have COVID. Like you are sitting there. You are radioactive. Believe me, I've never felt more lonelier when you're a goaltender that's been pulled, or you've given up a bad goal, you've given up.
Nobody wants to skate up to you and tap you on the pad and say good try, pal.
No, you are radioactive. Like you're right. Like if he didn't have the cachet, he doesn't have a job today.
Oh, no chance. No way. If that is Bill Gostkowski. Who just came up from, Auburn or something and has been in the league for a year or two, he's cut right now. Like, he's not on the flight home. They're like, you're staying in Denver. We're going back to Nashville.
You get a bus ticket home.
You might get a bus ticket. And kickers they get ridiculed, man. I thought of this clip, and we'll play it here. Bill Parcells, he had so many great quotes throughout his career. And back when he was with the Giants, this is the most gutless comment ever. This guy's on your team. He's your kicker. Like, he wants to be a part of the 53, you know? Like, he wants to go hang out with Lawrence Taylor and the boys. And this was caught on camera, all right? So Parcells knows the camera's around. He's looking for an update on the kicker, talking to the team doctor, and this is the interaction.
Well, he don't have to play, Doc. All he's got to do is kick.
He don't have to play, dog. All he has to do is kick.
Just zero respect.
It's that one position in sports where the kicker, that's been documented a million times by NFL players, coaches, people in every organization. They're like, that kicker is kind of not a part of the main group. He doesn't jive with everybody.
No.
And then they can have that one moment where everyone loves them. If, you know, Vinatieri, the first Super Bowl for the New England Patriots. He's the hero. Everybody's jumping all over him. But when you go out and it's a donkey show like last night, people are just like, come on, dude. Yeah. That's the one thing you got to do.
It's the one thing you got to do. And
I was thinking about it last night. Like, who is, off the top of your head, like the coolest kicker in the history of the NFL? Like, you know what I mean? We got the GOAT. You got Brady. Mm-hmm. You know, Ben.
It was the guy from Indianapolis that Peyton Manning hated. Who was that guy?
Oh, he was Canadian. What the hell was his name again?
Yeah, and him and Peyton Manning had an exchange back in the day, and he thought he was too cool for school, that guy.
What was it? Was it Mike Vanderjagt was his name?
Yes, Mike Vanderjagt.
Yes, the idiot kicker. So that was actually... That was up here. That was on the score, I believe. He was working. Wow. I think he might have been sitting beside like Steve Coolius or something, too. I think Cooley might have been there for it. And Vanderjagt was doing some analysis or whatever up here. And he's a Canadian guy. And he did have a great career. Like, he was a really good kicker. Mm-hmm. And he went on. And this was before Peyton had ever broken through and won a Super Bowl. And he's like just basically saying Peyton kind of freezes up or whatever. And Manning was at the Pro Bowl. And got asked about it and just destroyed him.
Yeah.
Just said,
I think
idiot
he said,
kicker,
I don't,
got
yeah,
all liquored
I don't,
up.
Yeah, I don't care what some idiot kicker said.
Yeah, it's like that idiot kicker got liquored up. And guess what? He got cut like 2 days later. And I don't think Cooley or whoever was on the desk was like, well, you don't have a job here for life. We booked you for like the off season.
Wow.
You got two shows. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for coming out.
That's tough. That's tough. But, yeah, I mean, I'm joking, but who is known as the greatest kicker of all time? Like the GOAT. Like I'm trying to think of a guy who lasted in the NFL for 20 years. He was money in the bank. And
what was his name? Buddy Guy or whatever?
Yeah, wasn't it?
Janikowski was an animal.
Comes
he was
to
like
mind.
A first-round pick as a kicker, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. The Raiders took him.
Yeah.
Al Davis took him. And
he was like in Florida State or something, and he was a beast. He was just built like a truck as the kicker.
Yeah, there's been a lot of them over there. Like, there's Mortensen. Remember Mort? He had the one bar, and he just was money for like 28 years he was in the league.
Bar.
He was in the league forever. He was kicking still. He was kicking field goals until he was 47 or 48.
I love that.
We'll ask people.
Yeah,
we got to
figure
that out.
Like it just, I thought about that last night because I was, you know, kickers are just guys who just get dusted, and I was like, is there somebody who just had the most like a Hall of Fame kicker career where you're like that? I couldn't off the top of my head, I could not think of one guy.
Well,
like, for me growing up, it was Hank Lissick, and Dave Cutler. Those were Edmonton Eskimo kickers.
Right.
That's
those
it.
Are old school Canadian kickers.
I just got
kickers.
A message. Lou Pasaglia, best
oh,
ever.
Oh, he was okay. BC Lions. Sweet Lou.
I don't even know who Lou Pasaglia is.
I remember these guys. Yeah,
Morton Anderson was his name. I said Mortensen. Morton Anderson. And he's in the Hall of Fame.
Wasn't he with the Vikings?
Yeah, he was. He was with the Vikings to end his career. He was with New Orleans. He got into the league in 82, and he tapped out in 04.
That's impressive.
So that's like a 23-year career.
And you imagine him on the plane. Like, this guy has been traveling with the team. They're like, that's the kicker. He's been around for 30 years. He probably
25 years, he sits in the front row. We don't even know him. He just kind of does his own thing.
Just shows up.
Yeah, you know, speaking of the backup goalies, we got some more audio here. I just stumbled across this before we came on. I'm so happy I saw it. So the Stars – I don't know. Did they steal that game last night? I think they stole that game.
Well, they're down 2-0 with 10 minutes left. I would say they chipped away, but they stole it, I would say.
They stole that game and didn't steal the series. You know, Vegas, I think Vegas played pretty well, but they couldn't score, and they were snake-bitten, and Khudobin stood on his head at times, and Dallas went about their business, and there's some analytical commentary that we'll get to here in just a moment. But this was post-game. I guess the Dallas Stars have some post-game routine where they hand out like a chain to the player of the game. And it sounds like this Khudobin is just a beautician.
He's a beauty.
Dude, you're going to be Khudobin tomorrow at the driving range before we tee off. You're going to put it on the tee, and I'm going to swat drivers, and you're going to be Khudobin. Did you see that clip where he was just teeing up golf balls for Como? And that's his job.
That's his job. And this is what he had to say after the game when he won the player of the game and the Dallas Stars realized that they were going to a cup final.
We're not going home!
How great is that?
I love
we're
it.
We're not going home.
We're not going home!
That was like comparable to Ovechkin when he was like, we're not going to effing stink this year.
Oh, yeah.
Remember when they won the cup and he said to the crowd, I told the boys, we're not going to bleep and stink this year.
I love it.
How great is that?
What a clip. But that's a clip from 2:30 in the morning at like Animal House or something. Like he sounds like he's greased.
Well,
if somebody yelled at that at a party, I could believe that.
That's what someone online posted that I saw on Instagram. And that's exactly what it is. It would be some guy who was like blacked out for 3 hours on the couch, and then the party's starting to kind of drizzle out, and he wakes up out of nowhere, and this is what he says.
We're not going home!
And the boys are like, all right, let's rally. He's alive somehow, so let's rally. And they rallied for Khudobin and the Stars, and credit to them. And I guess Tyler Seguin, for whatever reason, has to – I don't think he's got to explain anything to anybody. He was asked about, you know, goal differential and the fact that they're going to a cup final, and I guess the stats haven't been great in that area, and specifically in this series, I believe.
Right.
And this is what he had to say about that stat in particular, and in considering where the Dallas Stars are. They've punched their ticket to go to a cup final.
It says analytics are overrated. I mean, it just says we find ways. We don't care, you know. In Colorado, it was kind of a goal scoring match, and in this series, it's kind of more of our style of a 1-0, 2-1, 3-2, whatever it may be match. So whatever the game brings to us, it's how we're going to play, and you know, we just find ways to get the job done.
You know who should like what's going on, and I think I said it last year after St. Louis won, Brian, is agents. Agents should love it because some veteran guys might get a chance to go to an organization. St. Louis, when they won, they brought in Maroon. They brought in Bozak. They brought O'Reilly in. And Dallas, they got Perry. They got Pavelski. They traded for Cog. Veteran guys. And agents are always saying, I can't get my older guy a spot. I can't get him. So sometimes you just bring in the grizzled veterans. They can get the job done. Who knows? They might not even win a game next year. But you know what? They're on a run right now. And I told you yesterday, I keep watching them. I'm like, I can't believe these guys keep doing it. And they did it. They're in the finals, man.
They're well-rounded, and they're young. I mean, their young players are really good. They're star players, outside of Sagan, who hasn't put up the points you would or the goals you've expected. But all I could think about last night, you know, when I saw Dallas punch their ticket, it was like, okay, if the Leafs are looking at, I was bringing it back to Toronto, if the Leafs are looking at rounding out the team around the nucleus, around, you know, the spine of the team, you know, Corey Perry's. I know they tried with Jason Spezza, but, you know, Corey Perry's, but, like, you need guys that can help out and value guys. Like, Sakaris was bought out by Edmonton. He's fit in nicely on that bottom pairing. They've got a guy that Handley, who was in Montreal a couple years ago, he's come up and played well. You need to find players that can help shape your team. And that'll be the challenge for Kyle in the offseason here. It's not always finding, you know, the perfect analytical guy. It's finding the right fit for your team. And you could argue that maybe Kyle Clifford's that. You could argue that, you know, you need to add other players like that. A Patrick, to your point, a Patrick Maroon. Players that can help make your team a little bit different and a different look at the bottom of your roster. That'll be the challenge for Kyle in the offseason here.
Yeah, I think that's definitely appears to be an obvious statement for us, but I don't know if it's going to be obvious for him. He is committed to how he builds teams, and he said that when we had him on after they fired Babcock and hired Sheldon Keefe, and he said, I'm going to put my philosophy on the line and my career on the line doing it. So I don't know if he's had that come to Jesus moment and if he sees the game the same way we do. He likely doesn't. But in terms of the Sagan comment, there's a few things I think you got to get to here. One, it's an impossible question to ask and impossible for him to answer. What's he supposed to say? You're right. We don't deserve to be here. You're right, guys. Goal differential. You're right about that. Our bad. Colorado should be here, not us or Vegas. It's just it's a silly question in terms of, you know, leading him into a position where what is he supposed to say? He's happy they're in a cup final. And based on my experience, and I don't have even 0.1% of the experience you guys do around NHL players, but my understanding is there are three things that matter for most guys, not all, but most guys. What do I get paid? How many points do I have? And where are we in the standings? That's it.
Yeah.
It's nothing more than that. And that's fine. Just because some people are into certain things and other people aren't into certain things, like the players don't have to be a true believer in all the underlying stats and all the analytics and all that. It's not their problem.
Some players are buying into it. The last 5 years, definitely.
Go for it.
Players are thinking, you know, there was times where I've seen players just take flick shots on net just inside the blue line because
their analytics
might help. I'm like, well, you think that's actually doing something, taking flick shots outside the blue line, inside the blue line, just for your analytical numbers? People can see right through that. A good guy to break it down is that Mike Kelly, who could say, okay, their analytics aren't good, but they're doing this well, they're doing that well. He kind of understands both sides of it, I believe.
Yeah, he does. And you know, he works with SportLogic, so they've got a lot of different data points. Like they're not just scraping information off of NHL.com. Like they've got a wide array of how they're breaking things down. Impressive too.
Yeah.
But you know, they're not the only company out there, but they're a fantastic company. But you're right. It comes back to Brian, your point. Like guys like Tyler Seguin was put in a spot where he's like, hey, I get what you're talking about, but like, what do I care?
We're in the cup final. What does that matter?
As far as your player breakdowns, mine was even simpler than that. Obviously, you know what you're making, but I wanted 5 hits and 5 shots a game. And if I generally got that, I knew I was in the ballpark. There wasn't anything else to go on when I was playing, but that's how I simplified it. I want 5 hits. I want 5 shots on goal. And if I do that, I'm going to get my power play time. I'm going to get my looks. Everything after that generally would take care of itself.
Yeah, exactly. And every player, I'm sure, views it differently. But ultimately, there is a time and place for every type of conversation. I don't think that is the time or place to break down any specific number other than 4 wins against Vegas.
He wouldn't have been able to break anything down anyway.
It's not his job to. No. Right? That's on Rick Bowness, and that's on Jim Nill, and that's on the hockey department when they're building the team. But the players are there to play. And if you're through, and the reason I bring up his pay is because Sagan is locked in. He's got like 6 years left at 9.5. You know, we're in the cup final. What does he care about anything else? Like, it just, it's completely unrealistic to expect any player to care about anything that kind of goes under the radar or that isn't just blatantly obvious who's in the cup final. We are. Okay.
Right.
Awesome. Let's go party. Not think about goal differential for the next round. You know, let's just gear up and let's go. We'll get back into the NFL games last night. The Steelers won, and they won big, and Roethlisberger looked pretty good.
Yeah, he did.
You know, he got better.
He's lightened up a little bit. He didn't look like he was carrying as
much. He had one run in the first quarter. I think he grabbed his knee during the run.
He did.
And I was like, this guy is not going to make it out of this play. He grabbed his knee like an old man during the play, and I'm like, this is not good.
This is
not good.
He had the limp going. He had the big arm brace on in between possessions, and he looks like a beaten and battered, grizzled Jake Taylor vet that
gets it done,
and the Steelers are so happy he's back because he's a legit.
They're good, man.
They're very good. They're very good, and like the Ravens are very good. The Steelers are very good. The Browns and Bengals play Thursday night, and those two teams, you got to keep pace. You know, you got to keep pace. So we'll get to that a little bit later this afternoon. We'll get into the Nick Nurse signing as well. What does it mean for the Raptors, for Nurse, for Masai Ujiri, for pursuing free agents in the future? There's a lot to break down there. We will get to that later this hour as well. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, we'll catch up with Josh Lewenberg in about 20 minutes. Josh writing a piece up on TSN.ca about the importance of locking in Nick Nurse, and he was going into his final year of his contract, and he signed a multi-year extension today. We don't have the details on total years, but they avoided the whole lame duck coach thing, and I got to believe he had a ton of leverage. He deserved to. And now we see what happens with Masai Ujiri, because Masai's got 1 year left on his deal.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens with Masai.
I always get the sense that Masai, I don't see him signing like a 5 to 10 year deal. Like I see that he could be a guy that may get poached by another organization. Don't you think he'll end up in the
His name's always somewhere? Out there. There's always rumors about him, and maybe he wants to get into politics or do bigger and better things than only basketball. But we'll see. We'll get into that with Josh later in the hour.
Yeah.
But we have a former NFL on the line, former NFL O-lineman, and now SiriusXM host Jeff Schwartz making his debut here. This is awesome. How you doing, Jeff?
Glad I could be here. Thanks for having me. It's funny to hear basketball talk because we just spent like this last 4 days just consumed with football. I even forgot there was a game six the other day, like right in the middle of college football. No, actually, right in the middle of NFL Sunday. They played an NBA game. It's like odd to be talking about NBA in September, but this is our reality this year.
Yeah, game seven tonight.
Yeah, game seven tonight. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, Kawhi going up against the Nuggets. We'll see. I mean, you're right. I mean, this is football season, and certain college teams are playing, certain conferences are playing, but the NFL is up and running. They're through week one, no problems, no issues, and I think that's a pretty substantial accomplishment. You know, it seems like they've figured out COVID testing and protocols. It doesn't mean that they're completely through all the hurdles, but pretty significant that everyone of substance was on the field throughout the weekend, and all the games went off without a hitch.
I think this shows you when you put the time, the resources, the effort into listening to the science, listening to the data, and doing what they tell you to do, you can make life work. Now, I get it that they're able to afford the rapid testing, which a lot of people just can't afford, right? It's very expensive, and they paid the money to do so. But they paid the money, and that's the point, right? Is they listen to their medical experts. They listen to the people that have told them, hey, the distancing works, the masks work, the testing works. And if you do that, you can stay as safe as possible. But also credit the players and the staff for doing what they have to do off the field, right? They're not going out to bars and clubs. Now, a lot of cities, they're not even open, so you can't even get yourself in trouble. But nonetheless, right, they're doing what they have to do. The wives, the significant others that are home all day. They're not going out and bring COVID back into the house. So everyone deserves a pat on the back. I'm sure at some point there'll be a COVID flare-up. something will happen. It won't be ideal, but we could not, you know, we couldn't get college football off to a start. Even more games are canceled now. We got a full week of NFL action. No one tested positive. No one has tested positive, and we're continuing to play. So things are great for the NFL. Good job.
Jeff, what are the marching orders for the players? Is it, okay, you're just going to the practice facility, home, game facility, like you're not allowed to go anywhere? What are the orders for the players as far as what they can do and they can't do?
I believe they're basically restricted to what, you know, what the CDC or whoever's in charge of state, local, municipalities have said. Like if you can go, you know, eat an indoor restaurant, I believe, if you're an NFL player. But I know that they're being strict about fines. They're going to fine players that they find in bars. I actually do think that, I want to take that back. I do think that eating inside is an offense that they'll fine you for. I think that they laid out those outlines, you know, no movie theaters, no bowling alleys, no mass gatherings. But I think it does depend. Like, I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. You can actually be inside now up to 25 people. Other places you can't. So I don't know if they're going to just define it as like, yeah, if you're inside but you follow the 25-person rule, I don't know what they're going to, how minute details are going into. But, yes, they're going to fine players that are in the wrong place. And I think they already have. I think one player on the Tennessee Titans, an offensive lineman who unfortunately got a DUI this weekend, he was at a party at a college campus and got fined for that.
Well, and Sean McVay was saying, you know, the league sent him a pretty stern warning. We saw you a lot on the sideline without a mask on, and he's next week he's not going to make the same mistake.
Yeah.
With Jeff Schwartz, former NFL Sirius XM analyst. Roethlisberger looked good, man. He looked good. Like, it took him a little while to get into the tub. It was like he was just easing in, but he got in there, and then all of a sudden he was comfortable, and he made some really nice plays, and he looked like he has for the past 15 years. He'll take hits. He'll take shots. He's not necessarily a nimble dude, but he works in the pocket well and finds a way to make plays. I thought he played well last night. That's got to be a great sign for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I really like Pittsburgh heading into the season. I, in fact, said that they were the best value for the Super Bowl plus 2,500. You know, the defense was really good last year. Showed again last night. Even just obviously besides playing well, they did a really good job of being in the right place at the right time. They obviously forced a couple turnovers, which really turned the tide of the game. Obviously, last night, the Giants had a 19-play drive, ended with an interception, and the Steelers went down and scored. So it's a big deal to have those game-breaking plays on defense. As far as Big Ben, yeah, threw him out of half to get into it. Remember, he missed all last season, no preseason games, half a training camp. And so I think once he got into the rhythm of things, he looked like his old self. He's probably not going to be 100% this year, but that performance he put on yesterday, especially in that two-minute drive to end the first half, that's what they need from him. If they get that, they're going to win 10 games.
What about the Giants? I mean, they've been struggling a lot for the past 3 years. I saw a stat last night. The last three seasons combined, they have more losses than any other team in the league. That includes an 0-16 season for the Browns. That's how bad the Giants have been.
Yeah.
Daniel Jones looked okay. But he threw a couple of really bad picks, and I don't see the Giants winning more than three or four games this year. Where do you stand on them?
I think that the Giants continue to have problems at offensive line. We saw that yesterday. Now, it was a lot of it was, you know, I think Evan Engram screwed up, and the Steelers just you know, had some really good schemes, but their offensive line has held them back, and that's been a concern for years now, and they've tried to address it. And I think Andrew Thomas will be able to address part of it at left tackle. And then look, they're just not very talented on defense. Who's their guy? Who are you looking at? And be like, man, that's our guy on defense to make plays. They don't have that guy right now. They have, you know, Jabril Peppers, maybe Carter, maybe. But I mean, I think Daniel Jones is still very inconsistent, right? He had a really long touchdown pass, looked great, and a terrible interception. And so those concerns are the reason why the Giants haven't won a lot lately.
With Jeff Schwartz, what about the Gostkowski scenario where, you know, he's been around the game for a long time, Super Bowl winner. He was basically perfect for many years in New England. He misses three field goals and an extra point last night, ends up hitting a chip shot to win it. But does his clout allow him, you know, second chances, third chances, or might he be in some trouble in Tennessee already?
I think he'll buy himself some time because of his clout and what he's done in his career. Obviously, not ideal to miss three kicks, but he won the game with a kick at least. So you look at the bright side there. Yeah, there's not a lot of kickers just hanging out that are ready to go. So I think that he'll still remain on the roster, and you hope that he gets over the yips quickly. And he's a veteran. I hope he should. But there's a reason why Belichick got rid of him, right? And so we're seeing that now.
We were talking about kickers before you came on. Where are they as far as in the dressing room and the respect factor? Are they literally guys you just leave alone and you don't talk to until they win you a game? Or do you go out for dinner with them and drinks? Like, where are kickers on the pecking order?
I think that you know, I always like the kickers, but they kind of stick to themselves. Look, the rest of us are practicing all the time. We're meeting all day. They're not doing any of that, right? They just kind of hang out together, the kicker, the punter, and the long snapper. They're on their own little practice schedule. They're on their own little thing. You know, a lot of us get envious of them during training camps because they don't do anything, right? They just sit there, and, you know, every other day they work or whatever. But then I would never want to kick those kicks. So the trade-off, obviously, is there's a lot of pressure on them in situations. But they're looking at the other positions. Their job is to kick, and their job is to do it really well. My job as an offensive lineman was to block, and to block very well. And so we all have jobs. And if they don't do their job well, they might lose it. If I don't do my job well, I might lose it. So in the end, there's a mutual respect, obviously, for a kicker because his job is to make those kicks. And that's why they pay him the money, and that's what he's supposed to be doing.
Great catching up with you, Jeff. Enjoy the college football and the NFL the rest of the way. We'll do it down the line. Thank you for this.
All right, take care, guys. Have a good one.
Jeff Schwartz from SiriusXM, longtime NFL O-lineman.
I wanted him to say, like, those kickers are losers. I would never hang out with those
guys.
Yeah,
you're never going to see me hanging around with those guys.
He was very diplomatic, but yeah. He's probably thinking it, for sure.
But it is a classic, you know, you love them or you hate them position, because even last night, Gostkowski misses three field goals and an extra point, but he hits the winning kick, and they had to have it to win the game,
yeah.
Tennessee. So, you know, you never know what you're going to get out of them. And someone sent us a tweet saying they were disappointed we didn't bring up the Bengals kicker on Sunday who went wide right and then pulled his hammy immediately.
Did you see Burrow's face on the sideline? He was like, come on, dude.
He's reaching for his leg right away. I like, just, you
That's
knew
a smart
that.
Play. It's a smart it play. It's like when you break your stick or you yeah. fan on a shot. It's not your fault. It was
the King Daddy play. Topper of all time. I forget. I think New Orleans was in Tampa, and they made this unbelievable last-ditch effort, and they were throwing laterals and laterals, and they just needed the kick to tie the game. The guy missed the extra point, and everyone was just beside themselves.
Yep.
Do you remember that game?
I know exactly which one you're talking about. It was the Saints. It was one of the most shocking finishes in NFL history where
it
they needed
unreal.
A miracle, and they performed it, and then this guy trots out there yeah. and goes Finkel.
Yeah. Like that was all they had to do. They did the unthinkable to yeah. get it in the end zone, and they're just like standard protocol, bring yeah. out the kick guy, and he just shanked it. And everyone yeah. was like, oh, my God. God.
Yeah. That guy, again, on the plane, I can't even imagine. No.
I can't even imagine awkward. He was on the plane. I can't imagine.
Yeah. It's yeah. just, it's crushing that your team finds a way to do that, and all you have to do out there is run out and hit a chip shot. That's when it was a chip shot, too, right? They've moved yeah. the extra point back.
Yes, so.
That's
yes.
right. It used to be legitimately all three of us could have done that.
Yes, really. It was like a 25-yard kick or whatever. And yeah. it was just a chip shot. It was the snap was proper and the hold was on point, and it was a Finkel and Einhorn.
Yeah, and we might have to come up with a segment like on Mondays or Tuesdays because of after Monday Night Football, like bus ride home. Like who doesn't get the plane ride home? Who gets the bus?
That's a great call.
The bus ticket bussy. Tuesday.
Who's the bussy?
Who's the bussy?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he was lucky last night, but because he ends up kicking the winner, but if he ends like the Bengals,
they lose
kicker,
that game. If they lose that game, yeah, and
he's
the Bengals
in a whole
kicker,
different mind space,
very yeah. different, and that's exactly. what happened with Cincinnati. He needed that to tie the game. They lost, and now it's a very different scene. Yeah. The Jays are in the Bronx tonight, taking on the Yankees, and yeah, like this is, I think, one of the most anticipated games since the ALCS in 2016. You know, it's different than the Vladdy debut. It's different than the Bichette right. debut or Nate Pearson debut. because that wasn't about the team or the standings. That was about one player and the hype. But in terms of you getting amped up for a game, this is nostalgic, and we have not had this feeling in Toronto in 3 or 4 years where you've got a really big game. The Yankees are chasing them. You're fighting for that 2 seed in the American League East. You're well into the playoffs. Yeah, the Yankees are getting healthy. Like you got Stanton and Urshela returning tonight. Judge will not return tonight, but I think he's coming at some point. And if you miss him these 3 games, you're going to get him for the final 4. You have to believe. But the Jays have 14 games left. The playoffs begin 2 weeks tonight. 2 weeks tonight, the Blue Jays are in the playoffs. As long as they can hold on to it. They're 5 games into the playoffs with 14 to go. That is not like full blanket security, but the way they've been playing, the way their pitching is held up, it should be good enough to get them in. And that chase for 2 weeks from tonight begins tonight down in the Bronx.
You've seen worse scenarios, Brian.
You need an 18-wheeler to drive right off a cliff for them to not make it.
Like they're
going to make it. They're making it.
I think they are going to make it because you got to recall the teams that are chasing them too, right? You're talking Seattle, Baltimore, Detroit. Like these are not teams with cachet. These are not teams that are sleeping giants that are going to run off, you know, a 12-2 run and catch you.
Right.
They're probably going 500. I think if the Jays go 500, they're comfortably in. They can probably go about 400, maybe 350 and still get in. But why chance it? You know, just keep rolling. They're winning a lot of ball games, and they're getting healthier themselves, and they're in a good spot. So we'll tee that up later this afternoon. Again, the Jays starting their series down in New York, taking on the Yankees tonight, and Game 7 of the Western Final between the Nuggets and Kawhi Leonard and the Clippers. We'll tee that up as well. Ray in about 25 minutes. Josh Lewenberg on the contract extension for Nick Nurse. Is Masai right around the corner? What does this mean for pursuing free agents in the future? Basketball Canada, I got to believe, is pretty happy too. He's going to hold on to both gigs now. So we'll get to that and more coming up with Josh. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, a couple of big games tonight. You got the Nuggets and Clippers in Game 7, and you've got the Eastern Final of the Cup playoffs where Tampa's looking to close things out. And I just saw Pierre LeBrun tweet out earlier this hour, if Tampa wins tonight, Game 1 of the Cup Final likely goes on Thursday. So they're both in Edmonton. They just want to play. They just want to roll this out and get moving. And we'll address that in about 20 minutes with Ray. And I think we'll play that Anton Khudobin audio about 15 more times this afternoon.
Absolutely.
And, well, I guess, you know, we can play it right now because Nick Nurse signed a new deal. And this is what Nick Nurse had to say to everyone throughout the NBA that may want his services after he signed. This is what Nick Nurse said. This is exclusive audio from earlier today.
We're not going home!
Nick Nurse sticking around. He had 1 year left on his deal. I guess it avoids the whole lame duck thing, although I don't think that would exist.
Is that what the deal with the coaches are, Brian? They don't like entering that like with nothing after the 1 year?
Probably, yeah. And I think the organization probably didn't want the whole, is he going to leave? Are the Knicks going to come after him? Will some other team, the Bulls or whoever it might be,
yeah, good point,
lock him in? Yeah. And to discuss the news from earlier today, we're joined now by our Raptors reporter, Josh Lewenberg. This obviously makes all the sense in the world, so it's more about the element of surprise. I mean, I didn't expect to hear this news today. What do you make of the news and the timeline on the extension for Nick Nurse?
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as decisions go, this is probably the easiest one that they'll have to make this summer. This is a big offseason. Like, it's not as big, obviously, as next offseason is going to be. We've been talking about the summer of 2021, it seems like forever, but this is the offseason that sets them up for next offseason. And there's a bunch of decisions that they have to make in order to put them in a position, I think, where they're able to go out there and maybe get a big free agent next year. And I think in order to do that, I mean, obviously, we'll talk about Fred VanVleet and Serge Ibaka and Marcus Gasol on the free agents, the player personnel, because that's obviously what people think about when they think about the offseason and free agency, all that is the players. But I think it's just as important, maybe even more important in this case for the Raptors, is to reinforce that foundation that they've built that's been so strong for them that they're going to need if they're going to go out there and get Giannis or get whoever next year. So the first step was an obvious one and a logical one, obviously, in locking up Nick Nurse, who has done really well here and has become one of the most well-regarded coaches in the NBA already. And then the next step, and I'm sure we'll talk about this over the coming days, maybe weeks and months as well, is they've got to lock up that front office. Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster, they're in the same boat that you guys were talking about, that lame duck situation where they're going into the last year of their contract. And I don't think anyone would feel comfortable or confident about the Raptors' chances of maybe recruiting Giannis or anybody in a year from now if Masai Ujiri isn't locked up. That's got to be the top priority, especially now that Nick Nurse is taken care of.
Nick Nurse is taken care of. Do the specifics or the particulars of this deal ever come out, Josh, or are we just waiting on those, or they never come out?
Yeah, no details yet. I mean, at some point we'll probably find out, maybe not dollar amount, but we'll find out the year, the term at some point, but the team hasn't released those details.
Yeah, the Masai contract now, I guess, has been hanging over the team even more so than Nick Nurse, but I think this is as important as signing Masai Ujiri, and maybe a little bit more important because Masai has already done his job. He's already brought a championship team here, and he has left, even with Kawhi leaving, a team that is going to creep up on 60 wins and I think be competitive for quite some time. A coach turning over, moving on from a guy who is now considered a top five coach in the NBA is a different story. You know, you need to lock in Nick Nurse. Nick Nurse gets the most out of this team. Look what he's done this year. I think the players really respect him. I think he's somewhere between a tough coach, a demanding coach, and a player's coach. So I think, yeah, Masai is an obvious one. You got to try to lock him in, and I'm sure Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment are doing everything they can at this point or will be at some point. But I think signing Nurse is as important as getting Masai locked in because Masai's already done his job. He's won a title.
Yeah, I'll just say this. They're both obviously really important. For Nick, I think, I mean, what the Raptors liked about him when they hired him has turned out to be the thing I think that's probably his biggest strength is the fact that he's so adaptable and can coach different teams. So even right now, at a play we talked about how, I don't want to say uncertain the Raptors' future is because I think they're in a good spot, but there is obviously some uncertainty there in that we don't know what they're going to look like even in a few months from now, let alone in a year from now. But Nick has proven that he can take different types of teams, a team with a superstar last year, which sounds like a pretty good gig, but obviously that had its challenges as well, being that the superstar didn't necessarily want to come here and was in a unique situation with the load management and all of that. That was not an easy job last year to manage all of those egos and to manage that talent to get the Raptors ultimately to where they did, winning the championship. And then this year, I would argue that, I think most people would, that the sequel was even more important than, or even more impressive than the debut, doing what he did with what he got this year and all the injuries and all of that. So, yeah, I mean, regardless of what direction the Raptors are going to go in here or what the roster is going to look like, Nick Nurse is a guy that can, he's proven that he can make the most out of whatever roster that he's given. I do think that Masai, I mean, we've been talking about this for years, and it's gotten to the point now where Masai Ujiri is as big as anybody, certainly with the Raptors and maybe in Toronto sports in terms of that figure, that guy that makes the difference, that guy that inspires confidence, the guy that you can probably least afford to lose. I mean, he's right up there with Kyle Lowry in terms of being the face of this Raptors team, and maybe he is above Kyle Lowry in terms of being the face of this team. So, like I said, if you're going into 2021 hoping to use that cap space that the Raptors haven't really had for years now, they've been planning for 2021 for a while, and if the plan is to chase Giannis or whoever else is out there, you're not doing that without Masai Ujiri in the room.
Right.
And you're probably not doing it without Nick Nurse.
Exactly. That's my point, is I think Nurse is as – I think Nurse, what he's done through 2 years, that rings out for a lot of people, like a lot of players, a lot of agents. A lot of people in the NBA realize this guy has put forth plans that have worked and have won. And Masai is the salesman, but I think Nurse is right there with them in terms of this is what we bring as a collective. So I think when it gets to a point where if you get a chance to sit down with Giannis – Masai is making the pitch, but I think Nick is in the room, and I think he has to be in the room, and I think it's an important part of the pitch. Stability, culture, winning, a coach that knows how to push buttons and improve players like he has the past 2 years. And I wouldn't be surprised if Nick Nurse – I would be surprised, actually, if he didn't ask Masai, you know, I'm willing to stick around, I want to stick around, but do I have any reason to believe you're going to leave? And he's not going to go public with the answer, but I think this might be the first sign that Masai might be next, and hopefully is sticking around, because you would think Nick Nurse wants to know who he's working with and who he's working for.
Yeah, I would think we'll have the answer to that pretty soon. Like, if a Masai, and by the way, we haven't mentioned the name Bobby Webster really as well, but he's sort of tied to Masai in that front office. If those two are nearing an extension or have talked to MLSC about an extension, I imagine that gets done. I would believe that gets done pretty soon, maybe even as early as this week. So I think we have a pretty good idea over the next little while whether or not those two are going to be sticking around for the long term.
Great stuff, buddy. You can find his article up on TSN.ca. Josh Lunenburg, a Raptors reporter. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
All right, guys. Take care.
So, yeah, Masai and Bobby Webster are next. You hope, anyway.
Yeah.
You right?
Get
like
it. You're in Toronto. Need stability. Yeah,
exactly.
You need stability there.
Goes a long way. Yeah, yep. The three-pack that won them a title and that was here kind of post-Kawhi and everything that they've managed to put together this year, he is as synonymous with the team as anybody, Masai Ujiri. And he clearly has the ability to sell. And I do think it's imperative you have him, but I think it's as imperative you have Nick Nurse, who's really put forth a reputation over 2 years and built one up that is second to none in terms of coaches in this city that we've seen in the past 20 or 25 years. You know, that's how well he's done for 2 years.
All right, delivered a championship, but, you know, a close second, I'm going to say, is your guy.
Peter Horchak?
No, Dwayne Casey.
Oh, Dwayne
Peter
Casey.
Peter Horchak.
Yes, of course. Well, I'm always associated with Peter Horchak, too, for
You're
some reason.
Fascinated with that guy.
I miss Peter Horchak. I want him around. We got to get him on the show at some point, although I don't think he'd accept our invitation.
No.
Ray Ferraro in the next hour. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4.